Hello, everybody, and welcome to our webinar today. We are so happy to have you here. And this is Dignity and the Death Penalty, Evolution of Catholic Teaching. And in a moment, we'll do introductions and get going. I'm just going to wait a minute or two while people start coming on. And in the meantime here, I'm actually going to pull up my screen, which would be a good idea. So just relax here for a moment while people come on, and we'll start momentarily. Okay, just a moment here. All right. Sister Terry, can you see that, the full slide?
Yes, you're good.
Okay. All right, we'll wait just a moment here. I see people are still coming on. All right, I think we're gonna begin. So again, welcome here. This is a vital topic, a really important topic. So we're really pleased to be able to be here today with you. And we're really, really pleased to have our main guest, Sister Helen Prejean. Sister Helen has been working to end the death penalty for nearly 40 years. And many of you may know her because she wrote a book in the 1990s called Dead Man Walking, which was made into an award-winning movie with Susan Sarandon and Sean Penn. And this movie was so important because it really elevated the consciousness of our country around this critical topic. And I also want to say, Sister Helen has a real heart for the people in the pews, as she had her beginnings in religious education. And so really that's our purpose today, is to bring this to the people in the pews and the parishes. And she'll be talking with Sister Terry Rickard, who is the president of Renew International. And Renew, if you're not familiar, is about renewing personal faith in parish life, especially through small groups. So we're really about transformation in parishes. And then at the end of the time, I'm also going to introduce Emma Tacky, and she is with the Catholic Mobilizing Network, who is working very hard to bring consciousness to this topic and to abolish the death penalty. So we are going to pray. Oh, and I just want to mention a quick shout out. There's a group of students watching this from Elizabeth Seton High School in Bladensburg, Maryland. So to all the young women here with us today, right on. Thanks for being here, and I'm glad you are.
So. I just want to say a word, Paul, that people are kind of writing little notes. We have almost 500 people from all over the country here. So, and I think a few international folks. So we're delighted by the great turnout and the great desire to bring new life.
All right, excellent. So let's take just a moment to be quiet and ready ourselves for prayer. Sister Terry, part of my screen is blocking out my prayer. So would you mind praying that for us? Can you see it all?
Mine too, but I'm so tech savvy, I'm gonna move mine. So, but go ahead, I just moved it to the side, but I'm happy to help you out.
Go ahead, would you lead us?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Let us pray. Lord Jesus Christ, your Holy Church teaches us to choose hope over despair, mercy over condemnation, life over death. May we have the patience and strength to live by these ideals and imitate your example of compassion. You who live and reign with the Father and the Holy Spirit, one God, forever and ever. And the church says, amen.
Amen. Amen. All right. So just a couple of housekeeping things. Want to let you all know that the webinar will be recorded, or is being recorded right now. So watch your email in the next day or two, and you will get a link to see it again or forward this to other people. And also, we encourage you to write questions. Now, there may be a lot of questions. We may not be able to get to them all, but we will take as many as we can. So during this time, you'll see there's a little Q&A icon down at the bottom. and you can put in your questions there. And with no further ado, I am going to turn it over to Sister Terry and to Sister Helen, and I am going to go away for a little while, but I'll be back.
Great. So it's great to be with you, Sister Helen. I think it was about 18 months ago, I get a phone call from the reception, said, there's some sister on the phone. There's all the sisters calling me, you know? So some sister, Sister Helen Prejean. I said, come on, you're kidding me. No, I'm telling you, I think it's some kind of name like that. So I get on the phone, it's Sister Helen, and we begin this great conversation about how can we get the message of the new Catholic teaching on the death penalty out to the people in the pews. So we've been partnering together. We have a new book coming out, a small group resource for parishes. I know there's some high schools and colleges here, be coming out in the next month. So Paul will tell you a little bit about it. So that started our journey together. And now we're here ready to launch the book and really to introduce this topic. So Helen, it's great to be with you.
Terry, really great. I've always loved the work of Renew because I worked in a parish and that church either happens or it doesn't, where the gospel is lived or it doesn't. So anyway, I'm right where I want to be.
Great. Okay. So we're glad to have you. So as you know, the heart of our mission at Renew is really conversion, both personal and communal, particularly in terms of parish life, formation for the sake of transformation. So as you know, as Catholics, we don't think of just this kind of one-time event. We meet Jesus and our life is totally changed. For us, it's a series of encounters and conversions in our life. So I'd just like you to share a little bit about your long life journey of encountering Christ, being open to new challenges. And I know you talk a lot about that in your new book, River of Fire. So anyway, I'd like to ask you to share a little bit about your journey.
Yes. Grace, here's my little insight to start. Grace wakes us up. And so my awakening has happened over the years. I come from a religious community, Sisters of St. Joseph, who love our buddies, the Dominicans. Nuns are like this, right?
Of course.
Anyway, and so it was waking up and still waking up to what the gospel of Jesus calls me to. And it took me a while, and that's what River of Fire is really about, to recognize that being a Christian or following Jesus had to be more about, I prayed for the world very seriously. Prayed seriously that God would help all the suffering people, all the poor people. And I was charitable to everybody around me. But more was required, and I had to wake up. And that's in River Fire. It's called the Lightning Chapter, because we went to a conference. A nun spoke to us, all of our congregation, Maria Augusta Neal. She's a wonderful Notre Dame de Namur, taught at Emmanuel College. Get this, look at this reach. Sociology, what's going on the ground with the people, and the gospel of Jesus, and taught that for 40 years. And she's the one, we had a conference, and she changed the spiritual trajectory of my life. I heard for the first time the words I needed to hear, that when Jesus preached good news to the poor, I'm going, yeah, 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 every hair of your head is numbered, how God is like Abba, like Daddy, not just Father. And she said, integral to the good news that Jesus preached to the poor was their living in poverty wasn't God's will. It was a human system, and they had the right to reach for what was rightfully theirs. Mm-hmm. And that went, bing, Jesus, justice. You got to be in there with poor people. And that led me to move into an inner city African-American project, where then African-American people became my teachers, and the journey has continued ever since. And it was while I was there at Hope House in the inner city of New Orleans that I got that little invitation. I call Jesus sneaky. Watch out for sneaky Jesus. You do one little thing and you think, well, I can do this. Next thing you know, your little boat is in whitewater rapids. And it was, Sister Helen, you want to be part of this project? You want to like be a pen pal, somebody on death row? I said, yeah, sure. I was an English major. I could do that. I thought I was only going to be writing letters. I never dreamed I'd be with him when he was executed. And that, and then that execution brings me here to you today. It's why I write books. It's why I get out there with people. We have a strong social media, sisterhelen.org, staying in the public discourse and dialoguing with people, because it's all about dialogue. People have been supporting the death penalty, including Catholics. There was a terrible statistic in the mid-80s that the more people went to church, the more they believed in the death penalty. I'm going, something's off here. And I kind of knew what the answer was, because I had been separated from justice issues for a long time, you know? And so then that just, that experience of witnessing a human being being electrocuted to death, and it was all legal, and everybody thought it was a good idea, but I knew they had, people didn't have any way of getting close to it. I was a witness, so I had to tell the story, and so I've been doing it ever since.
But so I'm just thinking, I mean, in my own life,
I'm gonna hop in, I'm sorry, just for a second. We're having a lot of people say they're having difficulty hearing you, Sister Helen. You're
all right.
I'm soft spoken.
Okay.
And all right. Not a problem with you, Sister Terry, but so.
Okay, just, thank you.
Sorry about
that. Thank you, Paul. So, Sister Helen, you got to speak louder.
Folks, I'm loud.
Yeah, no, you're not some kind of quiet rose, you know, whatever. So you're like, we're similar in that way. So I'm just thinking in my own journey and religious life that Dead Man Walking really turned it for me. You know, I certainly was committed to the gospel, but I saw that film and I was like, wow, this is a critical life issue. So can you talk a little bit about writing the book and some of the those experiences?
Yeah. And I have to just say, if I hadn't had a really good editor at Random House, I was a first-time author, who helped me craft the story of Dead Man Walking, you never would have heard about the book. It wouldn't have been anything. Because I began the book and went for a long time in the first draft. I was so into the human rights of a person that they should not be executed. And when Jason Epstein, who was my editor, looked at that first draft of Dead Man Walking, he said, you wait far too long to talk about the crime. Pat Sonnier and his brother Eddie killed in cold blood two innocent teenage kids, shot them in the back of the head, raped the girl. And they're found lying dead in an abandoned sugarcane field. And you don't get to that till page like 100. Nobody's going to read your book, because you know they're going to think, well, she's a Catholic nun. She believes in Jesus. She believes in forgiveness. And it's all going to be about his rights. And then you say, yeah, there was a crime, terrible crime. But you got to go there with people, and you have to stand in the presence of that suffering and be outraged by it, because moral outrage is what we feel with the death of innocent people. And that's why the death penalty issue is harder for us, because we go, look at what these people did. How can you say to me they don't deserve to die? How can you say that? How can you call it a life issue? Look at what they did. But my eyes had seen it, see? And in River of Fire, that's the prelude in the book. I just say they kill, it's the fire part of the book. They killed a man with fire one night. They strapped him to a wooden chair and pumped electricity through his body until he was dead. His killing was a legal act. No religious leaders protested the killing that night. But I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. And what I saw set my soul on fire, a fire that burns in me still. And now here's an account of how I came to be in the killing chamber that night and the spiritual currents of my faith that brought me there. So when I came out of that execution chamber, it was early morning hours, April 5th, 1984. First thing I did, I threw up. I'd never watched anything.
Wow.
Anyway, and then my mission really began, because I remember thinking out there in the dark, right outside the gates of Angola prison, the American people are good. They've been made to be afraid. They're told these people are just killers in their souls. They can't change. We can't even send them to prison because they'll kill other inmates. These are murderers in their very core. All we can do is terminate them. And I went, I know that's not true, but I've been the witness, so I got to tell the story.
Great. Well, that's powerful. I mean, that's the thing, you know, when it comes to it's experience, right? That moves us to some kind of action when we actually see and feel with our own lives. They're saying they want you to talk a little louder. So the next question, you got to pick it up there, Sister Helen.
Okay. So
one of the reasons you contacted us at Renew is that the teaching on the death penalty has changed, right? So it's kind of evolved. And until now, the Catechism of the Catholic Church has actually been changed. So can you talk about the evolution of Catholic teaching on the death penalty from where it was and where we are now? And again, they're just asking you to speak loudly.
Okay, I'm holding my mic closer to my face here. Okay, great. Yeah, I mean, what an evolution, what a journey. And we do change. That's why Vatican II called us a pilgrim church, because we're always on the way. I mean, the Catholic Church upheld slavery for a long time. But what happens, and what happened here, just like you were saying, Terry, the people of God have experiences. You know, we go into prisons, we write letters, we have the experiences, the people from the ground on up, and we dialogue then. Our leaders come along with us. They're on a journey too. In the beginning, I couldn't get Catholic bishops to go to legislators. It was not a moral issue that they thought they needed to give a lot of energy into, but they grow with us. We grow together. And so the evolution happened, and it happened, first of all, the UN Declaration of Human Rights that happened in 1948. Pope John the 23rd, you know, who inaugurated Vatican II, pointed to the UN Declaration for Human Rights, which are inalienable human rights, which means that these human rights, chief of which is the right to life, is inalienable. It's in us because we're persons. So governments don't give human rights for good behavior or take away human rights for bad behavior. It's not in their hands. And so when you go back into the traditional teaching in the church, in the beginning, like when St. Augustine, who was the very first one to use violence, to say violence was acceptable. That's the 5th century. They had the Goths and the Visigoths and the Huns breaking down the doors and gates of Rome, and, you know, all through the people were being killed. And so he said, the evil may be coerced with the sword. But it was always about defending society. It was never this eye for eye thing. There are certain crimes by their nature which we will decide that we can kill you for. And then you had Thomas Aquinas in the 12th century. Yeah, but again, in the context of defending society, that the evil can be coerced in order to keep society whole and safe. And so we began and we progressed. We grow along with societies. Then we have prisons. Before, in the early days, they didn't have prisons. They didn't have a way of keeping people safe. And so then when prisons emerge and we have a way, then you can just see the development. The UN Declaration in 48, when only about 40 countries in the world did not have the death penalty, and we grow. And then there were some significant things that happened. I got to be a little part of it. I don't want people to think I'm some Saint Catherine of Siena, get to the Pope, change the Pope's mind, boom, we got, I mean, as if. That's not the way a seed grows. That's not the way yeast and dough works. It's just not the way we grow as a church. I did play a part, which we can talk about later, when I did have a direct dialogue with Pope John Paul. And it was about the thing of holiness. I meet a lot of Catholics who say they're pro-life. And I get that, because we are for life from womb to tomb. We're pro-life across the board. But they make a distinction when it comes to people who have done murder. They're pro-life, and I'm finding out they're pro-innocent life, which is fine. But when it comes to the guilty, they got a different attitude toward that. Draw a line and say, but they deserve what they get. Anyway, and so we can talk a little more about that. But so that happened in the 90s. Pope John Paul really is the one who paved the way for Pope Francis in August 2018. It finally changed the catechism. See, because what was happening is, in all the bishop statements that were coming out about the death penalty, began to recognize how racist it was, only poor people, all the inequities in it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we're holding on to the line, but the state has the right to take life. Say the UN Declaration of Human Rights didn't say that. It's not the inalienable right of people. And couldn't get rid of that line that we got to take away from government, or we have to recognize it can never turn over mm-hmm. authority to choose whether or not citizens. When you have a way to keep society safe, because we have prisons, that's been the nub of the whole thing.
So it's not about revenge or retribution. I mean, we have a way to keep society safe today, right? So that
the opposite of revenge and retribution, mm-hmm. because what the death penalty is, and we can't be thrown off because it's legalized. Mm-hmm. Thomas Merton says, when the world ends, it's going to be legal. You just, we know how to do legalities around things to make them look like they're okay. But in essence, what the death penalty is us as a society saying, the nature of this crime is so bad that you are not fit to live among us. We can make that judgment, and that you're not going to change, and we can kill you. You killed, we kill you. And those were some of your early, early bumper stickers in the death penalty movement. What does it mean to kill those who kill, to try to show that killing's wrong? There's the contradiction in from the beginning. It's all mm-hmm. about retribution. As if you try to pay in kind when anybody does a crime. Imagine if we had rape teams in prison every Friday night, go around and rape everybody and raped everybody else, or set fire to the house, because you don't imitate the worst possible behavior to try to set an example of what, because it's about who we are. People do terrible crimes, but this is about us.
Yeah, I think that point that you make, because I've listened to some of your interviews, this whole thing, it's not so much about the prison. Now, we know everyone, and that's part of Catholic social teaching, has human dignity, right? Indelible on a soul, it doesn't matter what they do. But this thing, it's more about us, right? That we, right. As a country, could you tell them the statistics on that? I'm astounded that we are one of the few countries in the developing countries that continue with the death penalty, right?
Yeah, it's only us in Japan, industrial, and Japan kind of apes us because of the influence after World War II with our presence there and all. The thing of inviolable dignity, see, I've been to death penalty trials and watched the prosecutor in the closing arguments. And they try to use the victim's family, that what they're going to do to justify what they're doing is to say they're doing it for the victim's family. And in his closing argument as prosecutor, and he's saying to the jury, we're going to go behind those closed doors and just think of this inscrutable task you're giving to our fellow human beings. I want you to look at the crime. We're saying he deserves death. Don't feel bad for him for all his sad stories about his poor youth and all that. He did the crime, and we so identify that human being with the crime. And he's saying to the jury, and look at that family sitting there. Mm-hmm. They're never going to see their daughter graduate. They'll never see their grandchildren. When you go in there to give this sentence, you just do it for them. Do it for their dignity. Do it to honor the one who has been killed. And look at that language. And so those victims, and you understand poor victims' families, they're in grief, they're in trauma. And here, we're going to do this for you. And it's a way of honoring your dead loved one. And they're vulnerable. And you get why they come out of courthouses sometimes and give the victory sign, we won, we won. But the truth is, the inviolable dignity of life, and this is going to be the heart of my conversation with Pope John Paul, because I said to him, does the Catholic Church only uphold innocent life where we can recognize dignity? But what about the guilty? And when I'm walking with a man to execution and he's shackled hand and foot and surrounded by these six guards, and we're going to walk across this room, maybe 40 steps, and they're going to strap him down and kill him. And he kind of turns to me and he says, "Sister, please pray that God holds up my legs when I make this walk." And I said, "Your Holiness, where is the dignity in rendering a human being defenseless, strapping him down and killing him? We have a way to protect society, as you yourself have said," and Pope John Paul often would bring that out, as have, and of course, Pope Francis too. "Can you help our church? Can you help us make the journey into the recognition that even those among us who have done a terrible crime have a dignity that must not be taken from them, an inviolable dignity?" Mm-hmm. And if you notice, when Pope Francis, in the changing of the catechism, that's what he zeroed in on. And that's what I love about the theme of what we're doing here. It's about that inviolable dignity of every human person. Every human person is worth more than the worst thing they've ever done. And Pope John Paul in St. Louis in 99, for the first time, put the death penalty in with the other pro-life issues. And in St. Louis, he said, "No to abortion, no to euthanasia, no to physician-assisted suicide, and no to the death penalty," which is cruel. Our Supreme Court will not, cannot, refuse to see that the taking a conscious, imaginative human being, putting them in a cell for 20 years and killing them is an act of cruelty. They won't recognize that yet, but Pope John Paul did. And no to the death penalty because it's cruel and unnecessary, because we have prisons. Even those among us that have done a terrible crime have a dignity that must not be taken from them. And when he said that, there was a huge pivot. And that's the way we grow. That's the way grace works in us, to come to understand. You mean even that murderer? And by being called to love that murderer doesn't mean that you necessarily feel, "Oh, I feel so sorry for him." Your emotions might be all over the lot because you're so outraged by what they did. But you hold on to that Jesus principle of, he too is the Son of God. And he has a dignity that, so we must not kill him. And for our own sakes, we don't want to kill him. Because look, I have stories about what happens to the guards who have to do the
killing. Yeah, I'm thinking, like you say, the wardens and the guards, right? Many of them are not for this because they are killing, and they're the ones that have to actually move
do it. And there's that man, and you've known him on death row, like one of the sergeants on death row in Angola, our prison. He knew each of the guys on death row, and then they put him on an execution squad.
Yeah.
And when he said, "I come home," he had been through 5 executions. He was talking to me and he said, "I come home and I get in my lazy boy chair. My wife knows not to talk to me." And he said, "In my gut, I know I helped to kill a defenseless person. Yeah. I abhor their crimes. Their crimes can make your blood run cold, but this is us." And he quit his job. We haven't had an execution in Louisiana in 17 years, except for one poor person who gave up mentally and just, you know, gave up his appeals. Mm-hmm. I think the reason is because we did so much killing in Louisiana. We killed 8 people in 8.5 weeks in the 80s. I don't think the wardens and the guards want to do it anymore. It's not out there, but the fact is we're not doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's some of the, we was one of my next question anyway, but I see some of these questions coming up. So recently, the federal government, hopefully we now is going to put a stop to that, but resumed.
We're banking on Biden on mm-hmm. to do that. Yeah.
Resumed federal executions. Do you want to say a little bit about that? I mean, it's been years.
Huge. It's a huge thing. Because suddenly out of the blue in July, Trump announced he was going to kill 13 people. And I just wrote an article for this. It's going to be published in The Nation. And I think that the problem resides when the Supreme Court put the death penalty back. They gave supposed guidelines that were supposed to hold it in place, that it wouldn't arbitrarily and capriciously be applied. And they were, first, the criteria for deciding who's death eligible has got to be that it's the worst of the worst murders. Nobody knows what the Sam Hill that means. You kill my mama. That's the worst of the worst. And they have the all these little metrics of aggravating circumstances and all. So first of all, you have a criteria. Nobody knows what it means. It couldn't be fuzzier. And then the double whammy in it is they turn over to the discretion of the chief prosecutors to seek it or not. The fact is that at trial, from trial on up, a DA does not have to seek death. They always have the choice that they don't have to seek the death penalty. But those that are rabid for it, those that cut notches on their belt, they used to give awards to each other in Louisiana, prosecutors for getting the death penalty. So they're going to go for it with gusto. And we saw that happening. And so bringing to the federal jurisdiction, President Trump, who's for the death penalty, he put an all-page ad in the 90s for the Central Park Five, these African-American kids that he decided were guilty, and let's bring back the death penalty. They had beaten up terribly a jogger, and they automatically assumed it was the five black kids. They were all innocent. All their confessions were coerced. So President Trump had shown he's strongly for the death penalty. And so he comes and he had the power and he started having these people executed because he had the power. And that's why it's so important that we recognize why Pope Francis, why us as Catholics, you came to a point, you can't entrust over to government that power over life and death. We don't give
it. Just depends on the person, right? Whoever.
That's what, the discretionary power.
Right.
And so, and you know what's worse, Terry? Here comes President Biden now, and he's against the death penalty. This is the first time we have had a presidential campaign where every one of the Democratic candidates declared that they were opposed to the death penalty. And we've never had that.
Wow.
Because the consciousness in the country has been growing.
So it's like there's always in the darkest moment, there's a little light because this raised up the fact that the death penalty was still able to be carried out, right? So hopefully,
and that the flaws in the way the Supreme Court set it up is bound to set it up that way because you're giving over discretion. And it coincides right at the time when Catholic teaching emerged at the point to say you can never give government that kind of power to decide over their citizens' lives.
Could you just, we've talked a little bit of the evolution. So clearly state to us what the current teaching in the Catholic Church, and as you, people will say, depending on what side you're on, well, that was Pope Francis. Well, that's not true, as you know, as you talked about it, John Paul II, Pope Francis, right? Just moved it to the end. So could
that's
you
right.
be very clear and articulate what the current teaching is now?
Okay. To be clear, the current teaching is that the death penalty is very much about the inviolable dignity of all life. And Pope Francis stated it clearly, even those who have done terrible crimes have a dignity that must not be taken from. It's the inviolable dignity of the human person. Mm-hmm. When you look at how degrading it is for a human being, conscious and imaginative, to be taken out of their cell. First of all those years of being in the cell anticipating and watching other people. Joseph O'Dell in Virginia watched his 20 people walk past his cell to be killed. And they watch other people being killed as well. And it degrades you. You feel that you, like disposable human waste, you're not fit to live. Who decides that? So it's very, very clear that under no conditions now can we ever allow the state to execute.
Mm-hmm. That it's not part of it, clear, definitive Catholic teaching. Just one question. I see Paul's probably going to get some questions, but
go ahead. Yeah, I want to get to some of the questions.
I'm just thinking, too. You know, you talk very clearly that this John Paul II made this one of the pro-life issues. We know that that abortion, certainly millions of babies are killed every year, that we oppose that as Catholics. So what about people who say, Sister Helen, I know they've said this to you, and they've said, listen, you got a passion and a fire against the death penalty, but, you know, What about abortion?
Well, you know, I think of us like a mosaic, or that we have different parts in the vineyard. Mm-hmm. You can't be a prophet simultaneously on every moral issue. Anytime I'm given a chance to speak about it, I speak about why abortion is intrinsically wrong, because you're depriving an innocent life from being born. I always couple it with that the only way we're going to stop abortions is you have to work with the women who are making those decisions, and you have to help them to make a good choice for life. So mm-hmm. just to condemn them and not to do anything to deal with the root cause that leads women to want to have abortions, that you got to look at it in a holistic way. But I was given my little part of the vineyard has been to work on the death penalty, because it's what I've witnessed, what I've seen. Mm-hmm. And then in meeting with Pope John Paul, and then also with Pope Francis, I saw the intricate connection between the inviolable dignity and not just for innocent life, but also for the guilty. And maybe that's how mm-hmm. I played a little part. And I've been talking to the American people on this. I mean, all these years, I've been to every city. Now I'm zooming my head off. But you can get to a lot of people.
You can talk to a lot of people. Absolutely. You know, I'm just thinking, we all have different gifts, different unique calls, and we're all about building the kingdom. So, you know, when people, right. you know, but you got to have a focus and a passion. But it all comes for all of us Catholics, Christians, or all people of goodwill, out of the source of what God's calling us at this time for life, right?
Absolutely. Whatever particular
crying.
And, you know, I want to just give a shout out for the Catholic Mobilizing Network, because that's their work, is to make connections with these issues. They work closely with the Catholic bishops. And see, once you get that kind of, this is not from the gospel of Jesus, I don't believe. When we begin to have a quick judgmental attitude toward each other, well, I'm doing this, but you're not. And if you're not for my issue that I see so strongly, you're not really cat. All those judgmental kind of ways of criticizing each other, I don't think come from the spirit of Jesus.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Yep. Amen. And I think that, you know, we're in this time of great division politically, and then it seeps into our church, and we're even hearing the bishops on different sides. Listen, we are one community, and we're about life and dignity and all those things. So we all have a different part to play. Maybe can I ask one more thing of Sister Helen, and then
sure.
we can, you know, sure. in your book, River of Fire, which I really tell people read that. It's a powerful book.
It's in audio too. I'll read it. It's
You read it yourself.
Inimitable Southern voice. You get to hear my reading of it in your ear.
Now, as a Catholic sister, I love it because it tells us that we're alive and well, and the power of religious life. You know, I always say it's the best decision I ever made. Not an easy one, but the best decision I ever made. So one of the things you talk about there and is hope is a action word. So again, before you hit the questions, you know, we need a lot of hope. We have this pandemic, we got this political unrest and violence, and we just had these people executed. Can you give us a word of hope?
Here's my thing about hope, that hope is an active verb, and it's what I discovered. Before I was involved with the issues of justice, and I would look at the world and I just saw it like going to the devil, man. It was so bad. And now you can get in so much information on so many levels about all the things wrong in the world. As long as I was on the side saying, well, I'm apolitical, I don't get involved, you know, that was a moment of awakening too. The minute I began to put my hand on the rope and began to get involved directly with people who were suffering and in solidarity and began to work for justice, it's like the life started flowing through me. Because you act, it's hope then. You got hope because you're acting and the life is flowing through you. As long as we stand on the side paralyzed, we feel hopeless. And the more information we get about what's going on wrong in the world, the more hopeless. And that's where community comes into, because mm-hmm. Lone Rangers don't make it for long.
in the long haul for justice. You got to be with other people.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be people of prayer and faith, right? Because we can't do it on our own power. So thanks for that word. And I'm thinking, you know, you're doing great and big things, and but people can do little things, right? They can make a phone call. They can, especially during the pandemic, write somebody an email, lift right. each other up, share faith with one another. So
I love that. I love that in you, Terry.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the gospel of Jesus a lot. When you just look at a tapestry, all those little are knitting and purling, mm-hmm. all the tiny, tiny acts. Pope Francis talks about that too. Mm-hmm. All those tiny acts. Yeah, we can do a lot. Just to sit down and write
that letter. Right? Do something. Instead of worrying about your own sorry self. That's what I say to myself sometimes, you know. When I'm anxious. Stop worrying about your own sorry self. Do something. You know,
and in sadness and grief even, because I've lost my brother and my sister. I just lost my brother Louis, little brother Louis to COVID. Wow. And so you're sad, man. And you're going, Louis's gone now. And you're sad. And sadness saps our energy. Just like you dissolve into this little puddle of sadness. And then the minute I pick up the phone, or Manuel calls me from death row, or I write a letter, it's just like the life can move through you again. Mm-hmm. Because you're centered then on the other, and you're not sinking into, you know, just your own sadness and loss. The secret, of course, of life is that to reach out to others, to love others. Mm-hmm. That's what the gospel of Jesus is all about.
Mm-hmm. Amen. So, Paul, you got some questions for us?
Yeah, I want to hop in with a couple. So I got a question from a theology teacher at a high school, and he said, I'm surprised by students who say that they don't oppose the death penalty because it's wrong, but because it lets the criminal off too easy. You want to see the criminal suffer more for the offense. Have you encountered this type of thinking, and how do you respond?
Yeah, see, that's taken the retributive principle to the max. What we want you to do is suffer for what you have done. We want to impose pain on you for what you have done. We want to exile you from your family for the rest of your life, and we want you to suffer pain. What kind of spirit is that leads a person to say that? And it comes from, I am so angry at you and outraged at your action, what you have done, that I want to pay it out to you and make you suffer from it for the rest of your life. Death is too easy for you. That, and recognize that spirit for what it is. And it is a desire to impose pain on the person and make them suffer, because that person has made somebody else suffer.
You know, the truth is, Sister Helen, people do that. Yep. We do that in our, for little things, you know, people hurt us and we want to cause them pain back, you know, and then for things a lot less than,
it's such a human thing. Recognize our humanity in this, that somebody's hurt us or hurt somebody we love. We want to take their throat between our two hands and kill them. Mm-hmm. It's that anger and that outrage because we've been hurt, or even more when people we love are being hurt, and we mm-hmm. want to go after it. But that's just the human part of us, and emotions welling up. And then that's where grace. We got to start working with grace. And it's mm-hmm. a heavy lift sometimes. And that's why the conversion thing is always, always an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. Because on the other hand, you don't want to, in quotes, forgive people to, you kill somebody, you know, sorry about that. But now let's go on to another big thing in my book. I want to point this out, where Jason Epstein helped me. I made a big mistake with the victims' families, because I thought, well, I'm the spiritual advisor to the two brothers that killed their kids. I'm going to be the last one they want to see. And when Jason was looking at that draft, he said, you're letting yourself off kind of easy. He said, it was cowardice, wasn't it? And I went, yeah. So he said, when you write your book, write about your mistakes. Don't just take people on the peaks of the waves where you did it all right. Take them into the troughs of your mistakes, because that's where the humanness is. And then they can trust you to be honest with them. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's a great spiritual lesson. I always say a spiritual person is an aware person, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the first things Pope Francis. They said, who is Jorge? Do you remember that great interview by the Jesuits? And he said, he's a sinner, right? All over social media, right? They're all, oh my God, the Pope's a sinner, right? That's what it's about, recognizing our own sinfulness so that we can move forward. So,
And, you know, he's great at these little things you were talking about, Terry. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll pick up the phone and he'll call his friends mm-hmm. in Argentina. And ordinary, he stressed that all the time. It's ordinary people who are the saints. Mm-hmm. Love that about him.
Mm-hmm. The saints next door, he calls them. Paul, you got another question for Sister Helen?
Yeah, I want to get in another one here. So there's a woman who tells a story, basically how she was converted through listening to you, Sister Helen, some of the talks. And she said that one night she was going to go to one of your talks and kind of tell you why you were wrong.
That's happened on more than one occasion.
But she ended up being converted and gradually in a deeper way. And she said the next thing she wants to do is become a pen pal for an incarcerated person. She's wondering what she can do to do that. How do you do that?
Terry, our program in Renew tells people how to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You want to say a word about it?
Yeah, there'll be some action steps. They'll give you who to contact. And I think the Mobilizer Network helps people too. So get a pen pal on death row.
What a great thing. Listen, you're going to learn so much from this encounter. You know, writing to somebody on death row, I mean, it was a human being. I thought of him as a murderer. I was real scared my first visit. You know, I got 2 hours. Man, I'm going to be talking to a murderer. And I met him and I saw his face. I thought it would be a mean, scowling face. He was so happy I had come. So the exchange that's going to happen, it's going to be mutual. You're going to be of help, but he or she also is going to help you.
Mm-hmm. One more thing, and you've spoken to this when you've talked about pro-innocent life versus not pro-guilty. A lot of people have made questions kind of about maybe a frustration that the church has been so focused on one aspect of pro-life, you know, but not the rest of the spectrum, and that there are such strong feelings about it. Can you say anything more about helping the church bridge this divide?
Yes, yes. We are the church. So when we are given the gift of seeing something and understanding it, you know what the definition of a leader is? Somebody who sees something wrong and steps up and starts doing something about it. So we can't worry what other people are doing or not doing. We get it. We grab a hold of that rope and we start pulling and we start doing our share, because thank God we've been given the insight to recognize that this is a way to live the gospel of Jesus. And if each of us would follow those gifts and be the witnesses of what we know and working for it, that's how we change. We don't do it by, how can you be so focused on this and look at what you're doing? Or even just, you could spend a lot of energy just being mad at bishops or the leaders of the church and what do we feel they ought to be doing. Us, we're the ones called to embody it. In the fullness of our baptism, we are given the full grace to live the gospel of Jesus to the full. And so what's the famous Gandhi quote, you know, embody the change.
Yeah, be the change you wish to see.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when we really get busy doing that and follow that current, we're not going to have as much. We won't be using our energy as much to be critiquing what other people aren't doing, including our hierarchy. Mm-hmm.
I will say, and it's tempting though, when people attack us or attack me, or that I don't have to defend myself. You know, if you are, whatever issue that you have, I think we got to take that nonviolent attitude. And and you could talk all day, and there are certain people are just not going to.
No, that's right.
Do your thing, right? Do your part. Exactly.
And you know what? Again, Jason Epstein at Random House, when Dead Man Walking came out, he said, look, the book, this is for people in this issue that are not so rabidly for the death penalty that they're impervious to hearing ideas. You're not going to get anywhere with them. And he divided up the population, proved to be pretty true. On one end, 1 in 5 people, and they'll be the people who belong to Amnesty International. In principle, they're already against the death penalty. He said, you're not talking to them. You're not talking to the rabid people. So for the death penalty, they could be on a, it's great image. They could be in a desert island with Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King for 6 months. They're going to come off the island. They're going to say, fry them. They're impervious. But 60% of the American public, and Thurgood Marshall, our first African-American justice, said this too. Most people never think about the death penalty. It doesn't touch them. There's so many other immediate things. Give them a chance. Bring them close. Let them reflect. They're good people, and they're going to get it. And that's going to work.
I mean, that's what our hope is for our small group resource.
That is what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's not going to be the people that are so, so, like, kill them no matter what, right? But it's going to be the people in the middle, good Catholics that are not sure about it, haven't given it much thought.
Or feel very, very ambivalent. That's the way most of us
come
into it. Because we are so outraged over the killing of innocent people and that human thing of they deserve to die. Then you gradually come to the deeper moral question. Who deserves to kill them now? Because we are part of the killing of them. Are we? Do we want to be part of this? And that's the growth thing. And it's so good when you can do it with a community of people where you can really be honest about your feelings and say, I don't want to see them die. I mean, as a starting part of the journey, that's where you begin. Mm-hmm. And then you take it from there and you trust. And that's why dialogue is so important. You know, Renew is doing what Paul did, St. Paul did. He just had a bunch of little small groups. And that's how the church began. You work with small groups of people.
Yep, house churches.
There you go.
I think Paul's going to share a little bit about the book itself. And
it's a great book. I love this book. No, it's really a good book. It's got great resources and information and spirit in it. And I love this book.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Yeah, so as you can see, the title, Dignity and the Death Penalty, Evolution of Catholic Teaching, and it's almost in print. We're just a couple of weeks away, but you can pre-order it. You can get it in a few weeks, and you can see that you can order it on our website, store.renewintl.org, or just go Google Renew International. You'll come to our website and just click on the store. And for all of you on this webinar, you get a special 20% off discount. So you can see the code there that is case sensitive. That'll be running through February. And just to say a little bit about the book, it has 7 sessions. The first session is really about going and seeing the movie, Dead Man Walking. So that's the bulk of the first session. But then there's other sessions that cover just most all of these issues that we talked about today. There's always within each section reflection on a gospel reading that ties in to the sacredness of life and the justice issues we're talking about. There's always an insight or insights from Sister Helen in every session. A lot of background and church teaching of how that implies. So you'll come be much more informed as you participate with this resource. Of course, opportunities to share your feelings, your thoughts, your faith, and always, always, always an invitation to action. So it's 6 sessions after that first one of viewing the movie. And so I want to say that's meant for you in parishes. That's the idea. To do this, it's very easy to follow.
I'm thinking we have a couple of high schools here and some people. So it's also great for those high school students could do this together. Most of our work's in parishes, but anywhere with your family, any kind of small groups. I just want to say something about the code. Did you see that, Sister Helen? That was your age. I think it was Sister Helen 20. So, right? We got that right?
What do you mean by that? 20 eons? 20.
All right.
That's given me a long life because it took me so long to wake up.
And so we're also running an online faith sharing group here at Renew that begins during Lent. So you can do it in your parish. You also have an opportunity to join us here at Renew. And this will be a group that will be led by the author, actually, Alice Hugh Brown, and one of our staff persons, Jennifer Bober. So the beauty of Zoom is that we could have 100 people, 200 people sign up for this group. And yet with the breakout rooms, then with the questions and the face sharing, we can break out into groups of 4 or 5 and be very intimate in the sharing.
Well, so I'm just thinking of one thing that maybe we can get Sister Helen to, we're not going to tell them when, kind of pop in on one of those sessions. And I bet we could, okay. I bet we could get her to do it. So that, right. Look, that would even be more of an.
I'm all in.
You're all okay, right. We got it.
So you'll have to sign up to, you know, catch that. And then, so they take place in Lent, Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern time, starting February 24th and ending March 31st.
Paul, there's a question about fees. There's no fee to join on the group, but we do ask you to purchase the book. Help us out at Renew. These are tough times, and this is the only way that we pay our staff or create this. So, but to join the faith sharing groups, no fee for that.
Yeah. And so go onto our website, renewintl. You'll see a tab up on top that says events and webinar, and you can sign up there. And lastly, but for certainly not least, because she has very important things to say, I want to invite Emma Tacky to come back on and to show your video and unmute yourself.
Paul, I want to mention that Catholic Mobilizing has been partners with this from the beginning. It's Sister Helen that actually came to us and, you know, encouraged us to get them involved. So every chapter, every session has a little story about somebody on death row. And we actually got that from the Catholic Mobilizing Network. So they've been a partner with us on this important project.
Yeah. So we're thrilled you're here, Emma. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Sister Terry. And then Sister Helen, of course, it's always good to see you. Hi, everyone. Like Paul said, my name is Emma Tacky, and I'm here representing Catholic Mobilizing Network. And for those of you unfamiliar with our organization, we are the National Catholic Organization working to end the use of the death penalty and promote restorative justice through education, advocacy, and prayer. And I am delighted to just share a few action steps for you all here today. Of course, I hope you take advantage of this wonderful opportunity from Renew International and use this formation guide in your parishes. But if you want to take action right now, here are some quick ways you may do so. And we will have these linked in the chat as well as I go through them. First up, in the first week of January, Catholic Mobilizing launched a grassroots petition aimed at President Biden, a Catholic, urging him to take strong action on the federal death penalty. After the unprecedented spree of federal executions under the Trump administration, moving forward, we want to make sure nothing like that ever happens again. So this petition is urging President Biden to take strong action on ending the death penalty. We ask him to do 3 things in the petition: declare an official moratorium on executions at the federal level, commute the sentences of those all currently on federal death row, and advocate to end the death penalty in law with Congress and the state. The next resource I want to share with you is our Mercy in Action project, which is a monthly email that goes out with actions you can take to oppose upcoming executions. Our next Mercy in Action email will be going out early next week with actions for the scheduled executions of Edward Busby and Willie Smith, scheduled for execution on February 10th and 11th. And then the final thing I will share with you today is our new educators resource on the death penalty. We often hear from Catholic educators who are in search of ways to incorporate the issue of capital punishment into their high school and college or university curricula. So we have this resource available that supports those efforts. And there's a collection of resources and activities that serve as kind of a general introduction to the issues of the death penalty as it aligns with Catholic social tradition. And you see my email and our website here up on the screen. If there is something that I have not mentioned that you are interested in, please email me at emmat@catholicsmobilizing.org. And then we have a ton more resources on our website, catholicsmobilizing.org.
Emma, could you say something some people want to write to a prisoner on death row, can you help them with that?
Sure. We do not coordinate that directly, but we know people who do. So we can help link them to the right people.
So if they email you, you'll link them to the right person.
Yes, great. I can do that. And then a special shout out, one last thing. If anyone is in the state of Virginia, there are two death penalty abolition bills moving really quickly in the state legislature. And we're at the final moments and I am crowdsourcing, looking for Virginia people. Please email me because I have some specific action asks for you.
Great.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Catholic Mobilizing Network, for all your work on this.
Thank you. Delighted to be here. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, that brings us to a close. Sister Helen, what would you like to say as we go here?
We give you the last word, Sister Helen.
Last word.
Okay, and I'm going to go right to Catholic Mobilizing. As people are being executed, it happens behind prison walls. It's a secret ritual. But every time we raise our voices, as Emma's inviting us to do, there's an execution coming up of a human being. And he or she is going to be killed. And life is going to go on all around as though it's not happening. But when we get involved, when we get to be part of a vigil, when we raise our voice by writing a letter to the editor, we are saying, "Then not in my name." And that's a prophetic voice, and that's the way the gospel comes alive. So I encourage you very much to work with Catholic Mobilizing, get the letter, because there are action alerts. Another human being is going to be killed. Will we be silent as it happens, or will we raise our voice in union with others to say no to this death? Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, everybody, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you, Sister Helen, so much.
Lovely.
Thank you, Emma. Great to have you here. And of course, thank you to Sister Terry.
Yeah, Terry.
We're gonna have Sister Helen back again, right, Paul? We're gonna do something once.
I already told you, I'm all in.
You're in. She's now
all in.
And part of the renewed community. That's it. She's with us. Amen.
Most importantly, I want to thank all of you who are with us today and carrying this out.
Everybody, thank you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. God bless and take care. Bye bye.
God bless. Thank you all. Bye now.
Thank you.